Hello, I'm David Crowe, and thank you for tuning in to episode 44 of The Infectious Myth. You can email me at david.crowe@theinfectiousmyth.com. You can like the show at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth, or follow us on Twitter at infectiousmyth. We're on iTunes and other podcast programs. And remember, I don't know you're a listener until I hear from you. And if you send me a nice message with a comment and your mailing address, you get a small gift from me. Today's guest, Lisa Bloomquist, is someone who was injured by fluoroquinolone antibiotics. And I think by the end of this show, I should be able to say that a lot more easily. She fought back by collecting the stories of many other people and trying to raise awareness. She also worked hard on her own health and is most of the way back to where she was before she started. We'll talk more about that later. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you very much for having me, David.
Yeah, so first, can you explain what fluoroquinolone antibiotics are?
Sure. Fluoroquinolone antibiotics are Cipro. The generic name for Cipro is ciprofloxacin. Levaquin, which is levofloxacin. Avalox, which is moxifloxacin. And Floxin, which is ofloxacin. And there are a few others, and sometimes they go by different names in different countries. But those are the main fluoroquinolones that are available in the United States. As you will notice, they all have the word flox in their kind of generic or proper name. Mm-hmm. And the people who are negatively affected by fluoroquinolones, we call ourselves floxies. And also use the word flox as a verb. So if you go through the multi-symptom, often chronic illness that is fluoroquinolone toxicity, we say that you have been floxed.
Okay.
So these drugs are very powerful antibiotics. And they work in ways that are very different from the ways that other types of antibiotics work. And hopefully we'll get a chance to go through that. I can go through it now if you'd like me to.
Let's first talk about the fluoro part. I presume the flox refers to the fact that there's a fluorine atom attached.
There is a fluorine atom attached to the quinolone molecule. There is. And it makes these drugs penetrate more deeply into tissues. And, of course, the drug companies think that that is a good thing. It's a bad thing. It's a very bad thing if you happen to have a bad reaction to them, that they are penetrating more deeply into tissues and more deeply into cells.
And does quinolone by itself, without the fluoride, is that also used as an antibiotic?
Not currently. And I do not know if that was because of the severe side effects, or if they just came up with the fluoroquinolones as kind of a progression of the drug and said, like, hey, this penetrates tissues better. Let's use this one.
Right.
But the most of the toxicity, I believe, comes from the quinolone part of the molecule, not the fluorine added to it.
Okay.
Certainly, I would be willing to take a look at evidence that is contrary to that. But the quinolone molecule itself is really quite toxic,
okay.
And the fluorine atom added to it just makes it even more toxic.
Because it can get in further into your body.
Right.
Okay, I understand. I mean, that's like chemicals are very different whether they're on your skin or that they're ingested or injected into your bloodstream. You can get completely different reactions based on how it gets in and how far it gets in and whether it's absorbed or not, things like that. So that's one thing I always had a trouble with chemistry, because you'd make a slight change to a molecule and the action of the molecule would be completely different. I never knew how chemists would figure that out, but I guess they just do a lot of experiments.
Right.
So what were the advantages of the fluoroquinolones over older antibiotics?
They're very powerful antibiotics. They will knock out just about any sort of bacterial infection. Bacteria are becoming resistant to them, along with all of the other antibiotics.
Right.
But basically, there seems to be this attitude with antibiotics, and I think that, I mean, personally, I have the mainstream opinion that penicillin saved millions of lives. Right. And when penicillin was discovered, it was really kind of lauded as this remarkable drug that is going to save millions of lives and increase our lifespan, and it did. And then people just kind of extrapolated from that, somewhat illogically, but not even realizing that it was illogical, that anything that kills bacteria is equally good.
Right.
And that is certainly not the case with fluoroquinolones. Fluoroquinolones have Cipro has a 43-page warning label going over all of the adverse effects.
And I'm
there
sure
is
that every
black box warning.
Yeah, I'm sure every person who takes Cipro reads the 43 pages, right?
Oh, right, right. I mean, I think that the warning labels are there to cover the butts of the pharmaceutical companies,
right,
not to actually give any sort of informed consent. I know that I certainly didn't have any sort of informed consent, but
yeah,
you know what? If I'm to be honest with you, David, I didn't read the warning label.
No.
I just assumed, hey, it's an antibiotic, and all antibiotics are good. All antibiotics are created equal. And then I was sick. For about 18 months.
Well, I think also in our system we have doctors prescribing medicines, and I think most people assume that the doctor vets the medicine. So if your doctor says this is what you should take, you assume that the cost benefit, the safety profile has been examined closely by the doctor and that he or she knows if there's any significant side effects, and they'll tell you about that, and therefore you don't need to read the 43 pages. That's probably not a safe assumption, but I think
right,
it's a reasonable assumption for people to make.
Right, and then there's also the assumption that is probably based on all of the pharmaceutical ads that we see, where they say, well, tell your doctor if you experience, you know, blah, blah, blah. What they don't tell you is that your doctor, A, won't know that it's from the drug because he or she hasn't actually read the 43-page warning label.
Yep.
B, will deny that it's from the drug, and C, won't have a clue what to do about it.
Right. Yeah, because there's no, I'm sure that doctors get zero training in how to deal with adverse reactions, let alone how to recognize them. I think the first phase of a doctor being faced with an adverse reaction is to deny that it's happened. And if that doesn't work, then they might have to admit that it happens. But when it comes to what do I do about it, not very likely to do anything except maybe give you another drug to cover over the symptoms.
Right, right. And that's unfortunately the state of affairs for people who are suffering from adverse reactions, not just to fluoroquinolones, but all sorts of other drugs as well. And I think that if there are any doctors who are listening to this, this is a huge opportunity in medicine to not only is it an untapped market, except I think that a good doctor could do a whole lot of good in specializing in adverse drug reactions. There are way too many people out there who are hurt by adverse drug reactions, and there's no money going into studying it. There's no money going into training doctors and how to deal with it. These people, myself included, are just really left in a void where we have to help ourselves and we have to help each other through groups on the internet. And,
right,
you know, I think that the day and age of the internet where we can be broadcasting this information over a podcast and where people can connect on Facebook, it's really it's a wonderful thing. But at the same time, it's just people sharing information. It would be really nice if there were some systemic
right
things in place that helped people.
Right, but you're kind of going to a much bigger issue, which is, are we overprescribing drugs? I mean, how many times are people given antibiotics when they don't really need them? I mean, they come in with some kind of viral infection or what's diagnosed as a viral infection. Well, give them an antibiotic anyway because they'll make them feel better. Like, it's pretty casual the way things are diagnosed. And patients are part of the problem because they go to the doctor and they want to come out of the appointment with something. They don't want to go to the doctor and be told, well, just kind of live with it or use some slow-acting natural remedy. They want a quick solution to their problem. So the whole system is set up to prescribe more and more drugs until at some point it collapses, I guess.
Right. And we're heading toward that, whether people realize it or not, that that the system is losing credibility. I know that after my adverse reaction to a drug, an antibiotic no less, that most doctors think has an excellent safety, an excellent safety record. I certainly have lost a lot of trust in the medical system. And you multiply me times a couple million and the system has a problem. And I'm not the problem. The problem is that they need to make some safer products. And they need and that the culture needs to change from being a pill popping culture. Right. And you know, like I also am part of that culture. Of course I take responsibility for that and I certainly realize that. But these drugs, fluoroquinolones, even though they have severe side effects and they have a black box warning, and a black box warning is the most severe warning a drug can have before it's taken off the market.
And what does
they're
it say?
Still given to people prophylactically for things like traveler's diarrhea. When people don't even have an infection. They're just like, oh, here, take this prescription for Cipro with you down to Peru. If you get a tummy ache, it might help. Right. Well, it might cripple you as well. So the black box warning is for tendon ruptures. It says that you can have a tendon rupture, basically, while on fluoroquinolones. What it doesn't say is that it weakens every single tendon in your entire body and that it can do so for months, years, possibly permanently. You know, I mean, I hate the thought that my tendons are permanently weaker than they were before I had my reaction to Cipro, but it's entirely possible and actually probably likely.
And that means...
You know, I hate to say that, but it's probably true.
And that, I mean, the tendons are what hold your joints together along with muscles and other things. So if you lose your tendons, you lose your mobility.
Right. And there are other ways that these drugs can cause people to lose mobility as well. Kind of there are two really broad categories that I put the side effects into: musculoskeletal damage and nervous system damage.
Okay.
And they can also cause muscle loss and cartilage disintegration as well. I mean, every single connective tissue in people's bodies can be affected by these drugs. The other category of side effects is nervous system side effects. People have horrible, horrible central nervous system side effects. Things like debilitating insomnia and anxiety that's just kind of free-floating anxiety for no particular reason. Depersonalization. I lost my memory. I lost my reading comprehension. Really bizarre things that are just very difficult to describe.
Right.
And also peripheral neuropathy. The warning label just increased its description of the peripheral neuropathy that people suffer from as a result of fluoroquinolone toxicity. And they just noted that the peripheral neuropathy can be permanent. And
just so for people who don't know what that is, because it's an important side effect, it's not just this drug, but basically peripheral neuropathy means that the periphery of your body, the skin, or other parts on the outside of your body will have abnormal nervous system reactions such as numbness, burning sensations, pins and needles. Is that about a good summary of what peripheral neuropathy is?
Yeah, and I'll also add to that that under the peripheral neuropathy umbrella, there's also autonomic nervous system dysfunction. And your autonomic nervous system is your kind of automatic nervous system. So your digestion, people can have a long QT interval and can even have some cardiovascular problems. Blood sugar regulation becomes a pretty big issue for people who are going through fluoroquinolone toxicity, floxies.
Right.
You know, kind of really multi-symptom illness.
And what was what were your specific symptoms?
So my specific symptoms started with floaters in my eyes, just like big black disturbances in my peripheral vision, and then I got hives all over my body, especially in my joints, but just big angry welts. And I went to the doctor, and they said, you know, you're having a reaction. We don't know what it is to take some Benadryl. The next day, my hands and feet started burning with what I now know is peripheral neuropathy.
Right.
And they got swollen and red and painful and just it hurt to move. It hurt to walk. I went from doing CrossFit and right. going to the gym probably 4 or 5 days a week to I couldn't walk a block because my feet just hurt so badly. And I went back to the doctor and said, something's seriously wrong with me. And they still didn't know what was going on, ended up giving me prednisone, which I now realize is contraindicated. But I didn't know that at the time, and right. they didn't know, and things like that. And I think I realized fairly quickly that they wouldn't be able to help me. But that's kind of a side note.
Well, it's important because that is the normal reaction of somebody who gets sick after taking a drug. They don't really know that it's the drug, and they want to go to the doctor to be told it was the drug you took or it was something else, and then have a solution and not just have people kind of rummaging around saying, well, try this, try this, try this, because you could do that on your own. You could go on the internet and do some research and say, why don't I try this or that?
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I suffered from temperature dysregulation. Like I was cold all the time. Kind of my right. natural state of being is being pretty hot all the time. I had a massive anxiety attack. It's really difficult to tell whether or not the anxiety attack was a symptom or if it was just a natural reaction to suddenly not being able to move anymore.
Right.
My tendons, especially in my knees and ankles, got very weak and inflamed and painful. Tightness in my chest. I lost my memory. I lost my reading comprehension. I'm sure I'm forgetting about some things because
that's already enough
yeah,
to say that
yeah,
you had a serious problem.
And to tell you the truth, David, my reaction was a lot more mild than a lot of people's out there. And if people want to look at some of these horror stories, you know, I know that horror stories can get to be kind of overwhelming and people tune out a little bit, but I really do want people to pay attention. So there's a website, it's called the Fluoroquinolone Wall of Pain. And if you look up fluoroquinolone, FluoroQuinolone, Wall of Pain on Facebook, you can find it, and also fqwalloftpain.com.
And you have
on the internet.
You have another website, floxyhope.com. Does that link to some of these others?
Yeah. Yeah. So floxyhope.com is what I started about a year and a half ago in summer 2013. So it was a year and a half after my reaction started. My reaction started in 2011.
Right.
And I had mostly recovered. And really, like if you look up fluoroquinolone toxicity on the internet, you'll see some really, really, really scary stuff. And I know that I was terrified when I first got sick. And just looking at anything on the internet would just send me into a bigger tailspin. And so I thought, you know, I need to put out the word to people that there is some hope. And that people do get better, and maybe just infuse a little bit of hope into their brains that they can get better too. And so I put up my story of hope and healing, and there's some other stories of hope and healing, and
okay.
and people were very responsive to that. I think that even if you're permanently damaged, even if you are never going to recover, I think it's still just important psychologically and emotionally and probably even spiritually too, to just have some hope.
Right.
And so I wanted to provide that service to this community of people who have been hurt by fluoroquinolones. But just because I recovered doesn't make it okay that 18 months of my life in my early 30s was taken away from me for a drug that I took for a urinary tract infection.
Yeah, no. I think you have a really good attitude. You're not trying to say that these problems don't exist. You're not trying to say this is terrible, poor me, let's sue the drug companies. You're trying to say if you work really hard, you can get over this. And maybe somebody should sue the drug companies as well. But the point is, it's much better to try to regain your health in these circumstances and also learn about the medical system, because it's not just these antibiotics that have problems. There's a lot of drugs out there that have a lot more problems than doctors like to admit.
Yeah. And once I started digging into how these drugs work, and I started looking at biochemical pathways and looking at when you throw a wrench into these biochemical pathways, there are all sorts of feedback and feed forward loops. Mm-hmm. And I realized just how little we as humans, like even the very, very smart humans who are doing this research, who are doing this biochemical research, they just have no idea. Like we are complex animals, and to throw like a really severe wrench into a very complex biochemical system, well, you're going to get consequences.
Right, and combine that with, I mean, different people obviously have different metabolisms, but people are also taking a variety of other drugs. Mm-hmm. There could be a lot of things that interact that make things even worse, and of course nobody's ever tested other drugs. I mean, there may be a few drugs that they know have really, really quickly fatal side effects, but the chances are the vast majority of drugs have never been tested with fluoroquinolones. So you don't really know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It turns out that fluoroquinolones are contraindicated with NSAIDs. So
NSAIDs?
So ibuprofen.
Okay.
Yeah, so NSAIDs, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory
okay.
drugs. Yeah, so ibuprofen is a drug that I took ibuprofen after I took Cipro. I didn't even take them at the same time, except the ibuprofen set off my reaction. I had taken ibuprofen thousands of times in my life. I used to just pop it. I used to pop it all the time. And you know what? Maybe that taxed my liver. Maybe there was like some sort of cumulative effect of all of that ibuprofen. My body just said like, okay, well, that's enough, Lisa.
Right.
Like you don't get to take this anymore. Except it's a tricky thing about fluoroquinolone toxicity is that that effects can often be delayed. For weeks, months,
right.
My reaction really, it started within a couple of days, but it didn't get to be full blown until 2 full weeks after.
Right.
I finished taking the drug. And then also there's a tolerance threshold that most people have. Like I was able to handle Cipro just fine back in 2009. When I took it again in 2011, I was not fine.
Right. I mean, a lot of allergic reactions are like that too. You might have something that causes really no reaction, and then the second time, it can be devastating or even fatal. And still, like you said earlier, people don't understand those things. They cannot predict that somebody's going to get stung by a bee once and then get stung by a bee the second time. And some people have less reactions. Some people will have absolutely severe reactions. It's just kind of a mystery. You just to react to what happens.
Right. There does seem to be some sort of tolerance threshold for fluoroquinolone antibiotics. That once you cross that tolerance threshold, if you take them again, you're going to have a bad reaction again. I mean, it even says so on the product literature. If you have had an adverse reaction to a quinolone in the past, don't take this again.
Ever again. So there are presumably lots of stories of people who took them once and had no problems, no noticeable problems, and then a second or third time is when they got the really big reaction.
Right, right, and that was certainly the case for me. And I think that because of those delayed reactions and also because of the tolerance thresholds, it makes recognizing these reactions really tricky. And then also, like we talked about earlier, the denial in the medical establishment that any of their drugs can cause the effects that are right there on the warning label. Like, of course they cause these effects.
Yeah,
like,
they'd love to say is that you have a genetic predisposition to it, and for some reason it just happened to get triggered 2 weeks after you took this drug, but it actually has nothing to do with the drug.
And you know what, like maybe there's some truth to that, that there is some sort of like epigenetic signals that got switched, but they wouldn't have gotten switched without taking these poisonous drugs.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you might have a gene that only causes you trouble when you take a fluoroquinolone, but that still makes fluoroquinolones a problem because you don't know who's got this gene. I think it's just so complicated that it would be really impossible to know who's going to be susceptible and under what circumstances. And what if you say there's a cumulative dose, it probably varies with different people. It would be unlikely to be the same dose in everybody.
Right. Like, I really think that the only way that you can make these drugs safe is to do individualized medicine like that and to check whether or not people have methylation issues, if they have the any sort of MTHFR mutations, and whether or not they're able to metabolize drugs well because of those mutations, and acknowledge that people are different and medicine is not a just one size fits all type of thing. And I mean, these drugs are just so dangerous and the effects are just so severe. There is some evidence that it causes basically that fluoroquinolone toxicity is an autoimmune reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And to trigger an autoimmune disease with an antibiotic is absurd.
Well, especially in the cases
at all.
Especially in the cases when the antibiotic wasn't really necessary. It was just a doctor saying, I don't really know what to do, so let's just take some new antibiotic and maybe it'll help, maybe it won't. But that attitude skips over the problem that there are adverse reactions. And to give, you know, if you think I'm giving a drug that might help, they should also be thinking I'm giving a drug that might not help and might, in addition, cause an adverse reaction. And if you think of it that way, it'd be like, why would I do this? Like, why wouldn't I just tell the person, wait a couple of days and see if it settles down before you do anything, you know, drastic?
Right. Our bodies have really amazing healing mechanisms. And I've come to recognize that as I've healed from definitely the most stress and trauma my body has ever gone through.
Right.
And we are just such a pill-popping culture, and there's just it's a shame because all of these pills that we pop are poison on some level.
Mm-hmm.
That's what side effects are. Side effects are a list of the things that can happen if you poison yourself with this
right.
particular drug. And fluoroquinolones in particular are chemo drugs. And I think that it helps people to understand the adverse reactions. It helps them to understand things like the delayed adverse effects, because people just go like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Like, you can't have an adverse drug reaction 2 weeks later. Like, if you have an adverse drug reaction, like, it'll go away in a couple of days because that's when the drug will be metabolized
right.
out of your system.
Right,
like
right.
this is what normal people think. This is what I used to think
right.
before this happened to me. But with chemo drugs, that's not how they work. They do cellular damage that can manifest. David, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm listening.
I'm sorry. I just heard a little bleep.
No,
sorry
no.
about that, folks. They can do severe cellular damage, and they have been investigated as cancer adjuvants and cancer therapies, actually. So I mean, like, that really in itself shows that they're not just affecting bacterial cells, they're affecting human cells as well.
Right. I mean, I think what you're saying is chemotherapy, they're actually getting inside the cell and doing the reaction.
Right.
Some
and
kind of
and
reaction.
Just like, frankly, people understand that chemo is poison.
Yeah.
And they don't understand that an antibiotic can be poison. They don't, it doesn't it doesn't register to right. them quite right that an antibiotic can poison people like this. And when you just, if people can reconceptualize these drugs and realize they're not penicillin, they're more similar to getting chemo than right. it is to getting penicillin, then it just becomes very apparent that it's not appropriate to give people chemo when they have a sinus infection. It's not appropriate to give it to them when they, as prevention for traveler's diarrhea. It yes. might be appropriate to give it to them in a life or death situation.
Yes. Yeah, when you actually need something that works fast because somebody's in really bad shape. But I think one of the other characteristics of the modern medical system is that the patent system means that drug companies have to continually invent new drugs in order to be selling patented drugs, and the patented drugs are the ones that have the high profit margins. And so I imagine that somebody said, well, you know, all our antibiotics are running off patents, so we need to develop a new class of antibiotics. And then when one drug company develops a drug of a certain class, of a new class that sells, then bingo, all the other drug companies have look-alike drugs. And I would imagine that all the fluoroquinolones are manufactured by different drug companies, sort of in a competitive fashion.
Yes, that's true. Avalox and Cipro are both made by Bayer, and Levaquin is made by Johnson & Johnson. And I think that what you described happened in the late 80s and early 90s. Most of the fluoroquinolones that are prescribed now are actually generic, which brings me to the point that that people who are hurt by a generic drug can't sue.
Really?
Yeah. The Supreme Court back in 2013, it wasn't very long ago, the Supreme Court decided that that if you're hurt by a generic drug, you cannot sue the manufacturer. And so lawyers are not taking cases. There are a couple of cases that are fighting that and basically saying, like, well, people need some sort of recourse. And so they sue, even if you took generic Cipro, you could still sue Bayer. Some cases are trying to set that precedent, but basically lawyers are not taking cases for people who have been hurt by generic fluoroquinolones. I believe that that is true for the other drugs as well.
Right. I remember hearing something about that and didn't really register what the significance was, because in the case of a generic drug, you have the drug company that created it. I presume in this case it's Bayer that created Cipro. And then right. you have some other company that comes in and manufactures the exact same drug, or hopefully the exact same drug, and they don't need a license because it's now off patent. And I guess what the Supreme Court must be saying is that, well, you know, you didn't invent the chemical, you're just manufacturing it. So if there's something wrong with the chemical, it's not your fault. But then you'd think you could sue the original inventor, but I presume that's not possible either.
Right. You should be able to sue someone. But yeah. right now, there's just this huge gap in justice where people who are hurt by generic drugs are just left in no man's land. And most insurance companies are either strongly encouraging or forcing people to take generic drugs. And so it's like there's just this class of victims, just people are being hurt and there's no recourse. No recourse right. whatsoever. And like the recourse, even if you are hurt by a brand name drug, is still pretty lousy. Like your chances of getting justice if you're hurt by a fluoroquinolone are really, really small.
And the justice doesn't make you healthy again.
No. Yeah, I mean, it drags you through the ringer, and maybe you get a little bit of compensation, but yeah, it doesn't bring back your health.
No. So how did you go about recognizing that you needed to be in charge of undoing the damage, and what did you do to slowly regain your health?
So I did quite a few things, and you know, none of them are particularly big guns, and they all just kind of cumulatively helped. I think that more than anything, time helped me. And people hate to hear that answer. They really want things that are more proactive. And the more proactive things that I did, I took a zillion supplements. The ones that helped, magnesium seems to help most people. And these drugs chelate magnesium out of your cells. And one of the theories about the damage that they cause is that it's all because of magnesium being chelated from your cells. And it's entirely possible, but I personally think that there's more to it. I took quite a few mitochondrial support supplements because there's more literature on them causing mitochondrial dysfunction. And there's also a relationship between mitochondrial dysfunction and magnesium depletion. Those are not mutually exclusive ideas or theories. But coenzyme Q10 is one that I took. I took a lot of vitamin E. I took vitamin A, B vitamins, just precursors to mitochondrial support and health.
And for I think probably anybody who's interested in health should know what the mitochondria are. But just in case, they're the organelles within every living cell of your body. That process energy. So without a proper supply of mitochondria, your muscles will waste away. You'll just have low energy throughout your entire body, and it will be most noticed in the places that consume the most energy. So mitochondrial dysfunction is a really serious issue.
Yep. And fluoroquinolones cause mitochondrial dysfunction. And so taking mitochondrial support supplements, things like PQQ, things like MitoQ, have helped people. Getting my mineral levels up really helped me. I took iron. Iron helped me quite a bit. I went to an acupuncturist. Acupuncture helped me greatly. Mm-hmm. Being in water helped me quite a bit. I went from being very active doing like CrossFit and running and like very intense exercises. And then right. I couldn't move for right. quite a while. Like there was a period of kind of complete inactivity for quite a while. But once I started to be able to move again, I started swimming. And with swimming, you're forced to do breathing exercises. And right. I even think that there are some energetic kind of hippy dippy things that are healing right. about being in the water. Swimming certainly helped me quite a bit.
Well, certainly if you have joint problems, swimming is like the least stressful exercise on your joints compared to like trying to run or walk where you're hitting pavement and having to absorb that shock every time you you move. So I can see that.
Right. Meditating helped me immensely. I mean, especially with the central nervous system and the mental stuff that I was going through with losing my memory and losing my reading comprehension. I felt like I was stupid and I was scared. I was scared right. and I was anxious and I couldn't concentrate on anything. And it was, right. it was really horrible. And just training my mind to concentrate and to be present again was incredibly helpful. I think that that mindfulness classes and meditation classes and even some spirituality and I don't come from a particularly religious background, so I did kind of like a spiritual sampler of religions.
Yeah.
And you know what? It helped. It helped me get my head and my heart and my soul wrapped around this, and then kind of brewer's yeast helped a lot. Let me just back up and say brewer's yeast helped. A lot of people are helped by a restrictive diet, things like the specific carbohydrate diet. Dr. Terry Walls has a book called The Walls Protocol, where she reversed a lot of her MS symptoms with diet. And like I mentioned, fluoroquinolone toxicity looks and feels a whole lot like an autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. So I think that a lot of her diet protocol can be very helpful. A lot of people are helped by glutathione injections. I did not get a glutathione injection, but glutathione and ozone injections have both helped people. Nutritional IVs have also helped people. There are lots and lots of things that people can do. There's there's so many individual differences, mm-hmm. you know, like I was able, iron, like I mentioned, helped me immensely. But if you are not a menstruating woman, taking iron could potentially be dangerous, especially if you have genetic predispositions toward iron overload. So, right. So it's like I can't say like, hey, this helped me, it'll help you. Because there are some individual circumstances that are involved in this.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. But I think a couple of things you said. I mean, first of all, if you have a reaction that causes you some kind of neurological problems, like losing your memory, getting anxious, things like that, just the knowledge that you have this problem is going to snowball, because now you're going to be more anxious because you're experiencing anxiety or you're losing your memory. And so I can see where meditation would allow you to cap the side effects of the drugs and to try to work backwards, whereas if you just get all wound up about it, it's just going to get worse, worse and worse. The second thing is that by putting together a website where people can see these things, they have a lot of choices that they can make and that they can think through. And it kind of forces people to actually make rational decisions about their own health, because so many people in the Western paradigm say that, you know, health is something I go to the doctor for. If I'm sick, I go to the doctor and they tell me what to do. But in this case, it's like, no, you got to think about it. What's good for you? What might work? And then try it and see if it's helping. And the things that don't help, stop. And the things that do help, keep doing or do more of.
Right. And it's really an unfortunate situation that so many people are kind of left on their own to do self-experimentation, because I think having a guide is incredibly valuable. My acupuncturist was actually my guide, and he had been through fluoroquinolone toxicity. So kind of in addition to being a healthcare provider, he also knew what it was like from personal experience. And I think that just having someone to hold your hand and to kind of be methodical as you're going through figuring out what is good for you. There's also something about, well, let me back up and say, I do think that the acupuncture needles and the herbs that he gave me helped me quite a bit. I think that the herbs helped especially, but I think that the fact that he believed me meant a lot. Just some validation was very nice. It was something that I wasn't getting from the Western medical system, or just said like, oh, I don't know what's wrong with you. All of your tests look fine. And right. Like, well, then why can't I walk?
Yeah.
You know, like, this is something is obviously wrong with me. I think that there are a lot of alternative healthcare providers out there who just have this approach where you keep on going, where health is something that you gradually work toward.
Right.
And you keep on going back to them over and over again, and you make gradual progress. Whereas the Western medical system, at least now, I don't think it's always been this way. We're just such a pill-popping culture where it's like, oh, well, this is something that's wrong with me. Well, okay, here's a pill. Now go away.
Right.
And that framework just wasn't working for me at all. And it doesn't work for really anyone who has a chronic or complex illness. And alternative healthcare, I think, it's just much more set up to care for people gradually.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the idea is that you go and you work on an issue and you don't expect a miracle, and the big delusion with modern medicine is that you're going to go in. I mean, sometimes it works. You take something and it fixes your problem right away. But if that doesn't work, it makes the problem worse. And then you go back and they don't really know what's going on, as opposed to trying to recognize the symptoms and work on it. Did you find other people had similar experiences where they would eventually be able to find somebody who would help them, an alternative health practitioner or maybe just an ordinary person? Did other people report that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that a lot of people have found help through their chiropractors or through a minister or through a lady at Whole Foods or the support groups that are available online. I think that all of those people can be incredibly, incredibly helpful. And I've really tried my best to help people
right.
through this as well. You know,
right.
There's a support network of people who are able and willing to help, and I'm certainly in that support network of people who are not only willing to help, but I've been through it and I've gotten to the other side.
Right.
And I do think that it's something that is helpful to people.
Well, I guess there's nothing when you have a problem. There's nothing like somebody who actually has experienced the same thing, because it's often very difficult for people to really empathize when they haven't been through the same pain and frustration over such a long period of time. It's difficult for people to do that, and also I think most people would be at a loss to have any clue about what to do about this problem if they were just all on their own.
Right. I think that people just really don't understand. It's completely beyond their comprehension that this is within the realm of possibilities, that a drug taken for a urinary tract infection could suddenly cause a multi-symptom chronic illness. And like loved ones, there are some great loved ones out there. There are some people who just rally behind their
right.
their flock's loved one. But a lot of relationships struggle through this because people don't understand. They say,
yeah.
well, you look okay, and all the tests came back saying that you're okay. You must be, people really defer to the doctor and say, like, well, you're okay, you're making this up, or you're wrong.
Right.
And that can put just a huge strain on relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And people have lost marriages, people have lost relationships with their kids and their wives and husbands, and it's really difficult to go through a mysterious illness, period.
Yes,
and
yes.
then also one that, like, you know, makes people question their entire belief in the medical system. You know, what if your wife is a doctor? You know,
right.
Like does that put a huge strain on the relationship? And I think that the answer is yes, and it's really hard. It's brutal for people. People lose their jobs because, like, you know, the boss says, hey, you need to unload this truck, and someone says, like, well, I just can't.
Right.
I just
right.
physically cannot do that anymore. And the boss says, well, why not? What's wrong with you? And you go, I don't know.
Yeah.
Everything's blowing up. Everything's going wrong.
Yeah.
You know, like, bosses don't understand that.
No,
How
no.
How do you even explain that?
Well, I mean, if you can come in with a note from a doctor, you can probably get long-term disability if you have a job that has benefits, which is increasingly rare these days, but you might get that. But if the doctor doesn't want to know about your problems and denies that they're related to the antibiotic, you're kind of left on your own. And then if you, you know, in the modern era, if you lose your job, you're living on charity if you're lucky.
It's really a shameful situation, and the drug companies are just getting off scot-free. Like they're creating this mess,
right?
And then they're not being brought to justice at all, and there are some serious problems with the system of just a lack of checks and balances on the pharmaceutical companies, where they're
right.
just able to hurt people without any sort of without qualms, because there's no recourse. There's no justice. There's no people can't really do anything about it. And I think that they are going to self-destruct.
Yes, because ultimately people, you know, if people lose faith in the pharmaceutical companies, they stop using all their products. They just try to avoid any pharmaceuticals, and I think there are an increasing number of people who are like that. And many of those people may even, you know, there may be pharmaceuticals that could help them, but once you've been burned, you're not going to take the risk of trying some other drug that the doctor ensures you, oh yeah, this is good, and haven't had any reports of side effects. I mean, that's how they all start. And then 10 years later, it's like, well, we don't use that anymore because it had too many heart attacks or it had too many of this or that. But in the meantime, hundreds, thousands, maybe millions of people have been harmed.
Exactly. And it's really a shameful situation that is not good for anyone involved. And even though it might be good for the pharmaceutical companies in the short term to not have people looking over their shoulder and checking their power, it's going to be bad for them in the long term because people are going to throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah.
I certainly avoid pharmaceuticals now, but kind of knock on wood, I hope I never need them.
Yes, because you may be in a situation where you do need them. But I think probably a significant majority of the pharmaceuticals that are taken are either completely unnecessary or they're in response to an adverse reaction from a previous pharmaceutical. So if you avoid them, life is actually not so terrible. Like I don't miss not taking pharmaceuticals myself because I just have an innate desire to avoid them. So I've never really wanted to take them even when I was really young. And so I've been just fine without them, except on rare occasions where I've needed some.
But, yeah, I wish I had just kind of absorbed that lesson instead of having to learn the hard way.
But, well, I have to credit to my mother because our medicine cabinet had a bottle of outdated aspirins and a bottle of outdated milk magnesia. And if I ever said, oh, I think I got a fever, my mother would just say, well, go to bed early and you'll be fine in the morning. And it remarkably usually worked. Maybe occasionally I get a day off school, but that was like the most that I ever got. I don't think I ever had one of the aspirins out of the medicine closet.
Right. I think you just a second ago, David, brought up an interesting thing also that I want to mention, though, is the side effects of a pharmaceutical leading to other pharmaceutical use. And I think that that's a big one for fluoroquinolones. So just kind of for example, let's say someone has a delayed effect of just free-floating anxiety.
Right.
People aren't going to associate that anxiety with the antibiotic that they took. And actually, this is where ibuprofen, Advil, or whatever can make things worse. So fluoroquinolones plus NSAIDs mean downregulation of GABA receptors. And so that can cause horrible insomnia and anxiety. And so then people get on benzodiazepines.
Right.
And then they get addicted to the benzos. And then eventually you have to get off of the benzos. And they go through withdrawal,
which
pretty much everyone says is absolute hell.
Right.
Or they get on some sort of SSRI antidepressant. And those have a list of side effects a mile long.
Like suicide.
Right. Suicide, increased anxiety, homicidal and ideation, horrible, horrible things. Like, and I don't think that even near enough is known about what those drugs do to the brain. I don't think that enough is known about what fluoroquinolones do to the brain either. They do quite a bit of damage to the brain. I hope that this isn't the case for everyone because I'm scared for myself. But I do have some friends who have brain lesions after fluoroquinolone toxicity.
Yeah.
And like, excuse me,
Yeah.
Like, you're not supposed to get brain lesions from an antibiotic, And then other people, when you get autoimmune disease like symptoms, people go down the path sometimes of taking the biologics, things like Humira or Enbrel, Remicade, those types of drugs, and they can flat out cause cancer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like those are some nasty drugs, and like those ones, like the black box warning, or even just like listening to a commercial, like they suppress your immune system and can flat out cause cancer.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, we're coming towards the end of the hour. So I think this has been a fascinating eye-opener for me. I really knew very little about this class of drugs. I kind of heard some bad things about Cipro, but didn't really know so much. What can you repeat again the websites that people can go to find more information about this issue if they're experiencing it?
Absolutely, and thank you so much for having me, David. The website, my main website is floxyhope.com. That's FLOXIEHOPE.com.
Right.
There's also the fluoroquinolone wall of pain, which is FQ wall of pain, all blended together, .com. There's also the Quinolone Vigilance Foundation, and they have a lot of great information. I'm not personally affiliated with them, except there is a foundation that is devoted to bringing attention and awareness to fluoroquinolone toxicity. And their website is saferpills.org.
Okay. So, well, I'll put those in the show notes so people don't have to try to write down these words right now. I'll make sure I put the right.
Thank you, Dave.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me today, and I hope this podcast is useful for people who've taken these drugs and had side effects, or people who will go to the doctors in the near future and will be recommended one of these drugs and might decide to take a pass on it. Maybe my symptoms aren't that bad that I want to risk what could be facing me. So thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Okay, and thanks to my audience for listening to another episode of The Infectious Myth. Goodbye.